nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes?
Well, it's that time of week. After Street Beat on Thursday, where we dial up Ed Byarski and we hear from the region's premier master gardener about what we should be doing in our gardens this time of year. It's In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski and me here in the studio. This is Oren. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're down there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, open every day but Wednesday. And they've got fresh dahlias blooming, and they're available by the stem, bouquet, or subscription. Plus they've got trees, perennials, planters, and soils. 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. All right, let's see if we've got Ed Byarski on the line. Are you there, Ed?
I'm here, Oren.
All right. And you're traveling this week, aren't you?
Yeah, we're down in Napa, California, and visiting with the grandsons. Going to do a little urban foraging.
Uh-huh.
And I've already gone over and picked some lemons. We're going to make some lemonade here after we're done.
Ooh.
And I'll see what else happens. Unfortunately, the figs aren't quite ripe. Blackberries are starting to get ripe. There's all sorts of stuff happening down here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, yeah, I think we're in for a pretty solid berry year now that you mention it. I've been just keeping my eyes out, of course, walking around, and I'm seeing salmon berries come on out there in the wild.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I was wondering how late they are. They are a little late, but still, that's good. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have some happier bears and birds and all of that, too.
Yeah, totally. Keep them well fed. Hopefully, you know. Yeah. So what do you think your gardens are doing while you're away?
Well, I'm hoping I've got a friend who is hopefully watering some, because we were certainly the watering inside the greenhouse and the hoop house, trying to keep up with that stuff. And so that's really important. After that, then the outside plants are mostly okay, unless of course you have container plants, and that you've got to really be careful with to make sure. And especially those containers that are in the underneath on your deck, underneath the eaves, and that sort of thing. So again, you got to be watching carefully. And at the same time as watering, one of the things you can be doing is doing a little bit of light feeding, doing some, you know, and whether you use Miracle-Gro or the weed juice we were talking about last week, or other liquid fertilizers, some of those are helpful to keep the plants growing steadily. If you're growing annuals, and that would include, I mean, most people treat fuchsias and the geraniums as annuals, then those too benefit by some regular feeding. They may have started with some feed when they first got were put into the pots, but need some more after that. If people put in some slow release, like slow release organic fertilizers, those two can help and keep them growing steadily, because that's the important thing. And of course, just having consistent moisture to keep them growing. And the feed helps, of course, to keep them blooming, or unless, of course, you're growing vegetables in pots, which really, same thing applies. To keep them growing steadily, and again, whether you're growing herbs, they usually don't need too much fertilizer, but if you're growing, say, different leafy greens, and lettuce, and Swiss chard, other assorted stuff, some folks may even be growing peas and beans and other assorted stuff in containers. Mm-hmm. All of those benefit by having fertilizing, and at the same time, you've got to be careful not to over-fertilize. Mm-hmm. So if you're buying some commercial varieties, usually for containers, they will often suggest they talk about fertilize weekly. In other words, instead of a full dose of whether it's 1 teaspoon per gallon of water, you might go to a half or even a quarter of a teaspoon when you water. Mm-hmm. And watch your plants that they, well, I suppose potentially they might try to grow too fast. Maybe. Usually that's not too much of a problem here. But there can be times if you over fertilize, and one to avoid fertilizing, because you'll get lots of leaves and no flowers, would be nasturtiums. So that's one there that usually you don't want to give them too much fertilizer. Otherwise you can have, boy, almost not quite dinner plate size leaves, but, you know, saucer size leaves. And then they just don't flower much at that point. So unless, I suppose, maybe if you're near something different, if you have to get those big leaves on nasturtiums, maybe you could do a nasturtium leaf wrap or something with some little bit of smoked salmon, some cream cheese. We'll throw some recipes out there, let folks start experimenting.
Yeah. So the leaves are good eating just like the flowers on those ones?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, you can tear them up, throw them in salads. And like I said, this is something I just thought about using wraps, but I have seen leaves that are literally the size of my hand or larger.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually comes with no flowers. So you pinch those leaves off, then again, you're using up the nutrients, quit fertilizing them, and then hopefully in a few weeks or so, once they use up whatever's in that soil, then they will go to change over to flowering.
Interesting. Wow. So, and that's a,
you know,
that's a very
nasturtium. Part of it is, seems to be at least, and this kind of applies, you know, not yet at this point usually, but later on for things like tomatoes in a greenhouse that actually getting them stressed by low watering, so they actually nearly dry out, will help to stimulate more flowering because they're, you know, I don't know that tomatoes have brains necessarily, but anyway, they think that they're going to die, so they had better flower and bear fruit and reproduce or else.
Uh-huh. Do you want to then, like, once the flower comes, do you want to return to watering and add nutrients to kind of let those fruit develop more?
Yes. Yes. Again, the light fertilizing. And again, usually if you're buying commercial fertilizers, commercial liquid or powders that would be diluted, will often tell you how much to use or how often to use. So read the directions. You know, if we're talking about fertilizing, even look at our plants in the garden, the ones that are in the soil. Mm-hmm. Again, we probably, hopefully you did, I did, put mixed in compost into the soil and mix some granular or organic fertilizer in the soil before we planted. We haven't had as wet a conditions as we might. You know, if it's really wet conditions, that will leach out the nutrients. So that's something to think about when, you know, if we have had that happen, or if you've been really watering heavily, that some of those nutrients are leaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we can add a little more. You can take some granular fertilizer and gently scratch it in like alongside the row. They call that side dressing.
Mm.
You can't very easily inject the stuff in underneath. So there are fertilizer injectors that you can literally do that, something that you'd put like on the end of your hose instead of a regular nozzle. Say if you're using a hose end sprayer, put your nutrients in that, but they have an outfit that you can poke into the soil to try to push the liquid fertilizer into the soil near the more closer to the root zone of the plants that might need it.
Huh. And I imagine that will show a faster result and
sure,
optimize.
It should. Yeah. It should indeed.
Wow. Yeah, those are good tips. You know, we haven't had especially much summer rain thus far. You know, I think I'm thinking back to last year, June was better described as June-uary.
Cold and wet, yes.
Yeah.
Cold, gloomy, and wet.
Yeah, we've had
so this year we're getting
pretty fortunate
it
one.
Seems like we're getting a bit more sunshine. That certainly is helping make stuff grow.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's going to help the plants catch up with the cool conditions, very cool conditions we had in April and May.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm hoping. I know pretty much the day or two, just, you know, since we talked last time, my raspberries and blackberries have just started to flower.
Right.
So, again, it's going to be still, let's see, 3 weeks or so before we have ripe raspberries, at least. Blackberries take longer.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. And you say that you're seeing salmon berries actually turning color in your area?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I don't think we're going to have our traditional 4th of July. Well, I suppose I can have them down here. Blueberry pancakes. We'll have to go to the store, buy some blueberries, and we'll make blueberry pancakes for 4th of July. Right, boys? Okay. Yep, they're all about blueberry pancakes.
Yeah, that I have not seen much sign of yet.
Yeah, they're parts. Little tiny green. Boy, they're tiny, the ones that before I left. So, again, hopeful. Again, if they're a few weeks late, so be it. But, again, that's definitely going to affect the birds and the bears and all those and us that depend on picking those berries.
So you've got me thinking now that you're kind of reflecting on the garden from afar. Lots of folks end up having to sort of leave their greenhouses or gardens for stretches during the summer, and maybe we could like run down a checklist of things to keep in mind to prepare for being absent from your garden during some peak times in the summer, and or some key points to pass along to your generous house sitter so they don't spoil your spring full of effort and planning.
Right. House sitter and garden sitter. Yes. Finding a good one is a challenge. And again, so somebody who will at least do the watering, that's a good thing. But also somebody who will be doing some picking, thinning. And that's something where, again, I was trying to do some of that in my hoop house sitter. That's kind of a new job description, is, among other things, needs to be continue to thin the beets and thin out the kale so the ones that are left behind can keep growing well. Mm-hmm. So look at your plants, and that's where the directions on the seed packet, if you can find those seed packets that you used a month or two ago, usually talk about spacing. Mm-hmm. So if you don't space out your carrots, you're going to have lots and lots of either little carrots or the little crooked ones, that the ones that wrap around each other.
Right.
You know, you got to do some thinning. You got to thin them out. So that, and same thing. So we're eating the beet greens, but you can eat the carrot greens also. The carrot greens can actually act as a parsley substitute. And I've even used them in making the chimichurri with the garlic scapes that we were talking about last week too.
Yeah.
But you know, so an ongoing watching the garden, taking the the morning walk or the afternoon walk or the three times a day walk, whatever many it takes, that looking at what the plants need, again, whether they need fertilizer, they need watering, they need thinning, and then they hopefully that leads to their need for harvesting. So again, if you're harvesting in timely fashion, so say your peas that are just starting to flower, it only takes about 3 days after they're flowering till you'll be harvesting peas. And you want to continue harvesting those. Don't leave them on to grow big and fat, because then, again, that can stimulate them to, again, the little pea brain that they may have will tell the plant that, well, we've got plenty of peas on the vine to ripen and to set seed, so we don't need to keep flowering and making more.
Right.
So again, it's kind of like the deadheading of flowers, that keeping them harvested means they will keep flowering more and keep growing more of these that we want.
Right.
Broccoli. Broccoli is a really good one. Yep. So one of my grandsons here reminds me of harvesting tomatoes regularly. We are eating, last night and today, eating tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, and some that we planted in March of 2017.
Wow. Yeah.
Because they had such a mild winter down here, they did not die.
Huh.
And so we are eating handfuls of cherry tomatoes that were planted last year. And then there's the new ones that we planted this year, which are starting to ripen also. We got a little bit bigger tomatoes here.
Yeah, wow.
So, but that's why, yeah, you want to keep harvesting that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Broccoli I got started on, you harvest the main big head, and then you get little smaller side shoots that come off. Mm-hmm. Don't let those go to flowering. The flowers are still edible too, and they're actually remarkably sweet, the broccoli flowers are. So those too can be tossed into your salads. But still, if you're growing broccoli for the nice green heads and stuff, and then you get the basically mini heads that come off the side of the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And if they finally quit producing, pull them out. Get them out of there and potentially put something new into the garden. Yeah. So you're going to have some new space there for something else. If your radishes, if you finished eating your radishes or you or they're bolting, get them out of there. Spinach. I've got some spinach plants. They're bolting. They need to come out. Although those, at least, I can save seeds from, yeah. you know, to grow spinach again. So, again, you kind of think about if you're growing some plants for seed, then you want to let them grow and mature.
Right. How mature do you want to let the seeds get? Do you want to just as soon as there are seeds, great, take them, dry them off the plant?
Like on the spinach? So yeah. those are, yeah, they're kind of interesting. They will usually I will leave the plant in there. And they're, spinach is kind of one of those interesting plants that has separate male and female plants. Hmm. And it's pretty easy to tell. You can see the difference in the flowers, but even more so that you can see all the pollen. The males shed tremendous quantities of pollen. I mean, they'll turn the leaves underneath the flowers yellow with pollen. To that will then, even in a greenhouse, doesn't take much. And usually they're mixed because you don't know what you're planting or what you're going to get. Mm. So they will pollinate the females. And then you get these funny little, they're odd seed. They're definitely an odd-looking seed. And that form right there at the base of each leaf, there's usually a little cluster of them where you see the flowers first and then the seeds come on later. And I usually let them go to pretty much fully dry and brown.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take those stems, cut the stems off, and I'll strip the seeds, and I'll even try to kind of crumble them. It's because usually there's a cluster of seeds together, mm-hmm. and when you want to replant, you want to kind of split those apart rather than planting one seed cluster, which may result in four or five plants. You want to have individual ones. So, and for that, they're a little difficult to do, so you may want some pretty good gloves to do that with when you're harvesting them and when you're trying to do that separation, kind of crumbling them between your fingers.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's a good tip for when you do see something going to seed and you think, well, all right, this one I'll let go and harvest the seeds from.
Mm-hmm. And this, it was funny because I had this discussion with my grandsons today at the lunch table. We started talking about the seeds and the plants that we are growing here, and we were looking at blue corn chips and said, how do they turn the blue chips blue? I said, well, that's actually the corn itself is, the kernels are blue. And we got into a little bit of the hybridizing stuff, which we've talked about in the past,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of fun. So again, those spinach seeds, if they are probably already hybrids, although there are some non-hybrid varieties, like one is called Bloomsdale Longstanding. It's kind of a slow one to bolt.
Hmm.
So if you're growing several different kinds and they cross, then you can, you know, what you get is going to be a hybrid, and then you replant them, and then you can do some selection. Maybe select the plants that bolt, that are the slowest ones to bolt.
Right.
You know, if they go right to flower when they're only 6 inches tall, pull those out, then you have some other ones that are nice and green and leafy and not bolting. Leave those in. Those are the ones to save for seeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. When we're doing our seed saving, make sure you're saving seeds from plants that you
yeah.
are consider ideal examples of what you want to be growing.
With the kale, I mean, again, if you're... You know, you want to think about that, too, so that if you want to save seeds, you may want to plan not to plant two or three or four different kinds, say, of kale. Mm-hmm. Kale is an easy one to save seed from.
Yeah.
You don't want to have three or four different kinds of kale close by each other because they will cross-pollinate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I only grow one kind, the Red Russian kale, so I'm assured that those will come true from the seeds that I collect.
Mm-hmm. And is kale one of those that it takes 2 years to go to seed?
Yes, maybe, sometimes.
yeah.
It kind of depends on weather, and it kind of depends on that stress we were talking about.
Ah.
That if the plants, sometimes, especially if you plant them really early in the spring, and depending on how much cold and warm and cold and warm you have, some of them may go to flower the first year. But usually, and that's where the challenge can be, if the winter allows, if the winter isn't too harsh, then the plants survive the winter, and then they start to flower the next spring.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some kale, again, that overwintered. Not as much as usual, because it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
So there weren't as many of them that survived the winter, but there are some that are flowering now from which I could gather seed, although I still have a couple of quarts of seed from last year and the year before.
Hmm. So
and they last. Those last pretty well.
Yeah. For kale survivors, I'm thinking about kind of picturing them in the winter. How much of the plant needs to be there? Or is it a matter of, like, the root system surviving the snowy season? Or
yes. Well, usually you need some of the top two.
Yeah.
And so very often the survival tends to be better with younger plants rather than older plants. So a big kale plant, if you planted last year in early, say in the spring, you might have a kale plant that's 2 to 3 feet tall, big and healthy and beautiful. Think, oh, well, this, I'd love to have this one over winter, or several of these, because you normally want to have multiple plants for better pollination between for saving. But you're actually better off, if you know you want to save them, plant them late, like plant them at the end of July or even August.
Mm-hmm.
They'll still grow. You'll still probably get plants that are 6 inches to a foot tall. But those will seem to, and I don't know what, there's probably a physiological reason for that, but those will tend to overwinter better.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that be with protection, you know, if you put some Rime or horticulture flat fabric or old blankets or whatever, spruce boughs over them, the smaller plants seem to survive better. And certainly that applies to the spinach that I've grown in the past, plant them in September, and they're just barely up in a couple of leaves, and those tend to survive better than a big plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes sense, and that's a good thing to think about if you're planning to collect seeds from your greens and from your garden that way. Good thing to think about.
It actually makes sense, you know, even just planting some early ones so you get your early crop to eat,
mm-hmm.
and then plant some later ones that will then become your seed crop, or just have, so you have a succession. You can even have, you know, plant them a month apart or 2 months apart, mm-hmm. and that way you have a succession of them, and again, whether you're marketing them yourself or to sell,
mm-hmm.
or whether you just want a fresh young kale to eat for yourself too, that's a good thing to do, to stage, to time the different ones.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the same thing with broccoli, which we just did. I did some of that with cabbage. And like I said, I was transplanting those last week. I'm hoping that we're supposed to get rain up there today and tomorrow. I hope we do this for the outdoor plants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not watering much of that.
Right.
I watered them when I transplanted them with some of that weed juice tea, but I'm hoping Mother Nature will take care of some of that while I'm gone.
Yeah. Well, and maybe so. It might be a rainy weekend for Southeast, and then hopefully back onto summery conditions again. We've had a nice June, and we might have a pleasantly drought-like July, too. It could be.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll see. Certainly water levels in some of the creeks are low.
Too low,
so
yeah.
So that's certainly of concern for the salmon
yeah.
coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens.
Definitely. The eternal struggle in the summer. Like the need and appreciation for real rain, but also the passionate need for something that feels like warmth and pleasant conditions.
Right. Nice rain to knock down the dust and all that sort of thing, which we should not complain about too much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so maybe some thoughts to leave people with are, this is a good time of year to be lightly fertilizing with liquid fertilizer, especially if you're growing in containers. And just to be kind of checking the moisture level, thinning out, especially if you've got stuff coming up and everything is a little too close together, especially in containers or boxed beds or things like that. Want to
yep.
be making sure everything's got room to grow to its full potential as much as you can. And any parting thoughts? It might be actually, I suppose, a couple of weeks before we see you. The holiday week next week might leave us all a little out of touch, and then we'll be back after that. But
we're actually going to be traveling on next Thursday,
oh, okay.
so mm-hmm. may not be able to make it. But then we can get a final report from down here when we get back the week after, and how everything hopefully is surviving and thriving
mm-hmm.
In the neighborhood back in Alaska.
Yes, indeed. Well, okay, good. We'll check in then, and wish you safe travels, and I hope your garden grows well without you. And the same well wishes to every garden that gets abandoned by people out fishing or you know, taking a summertime trip themselves.
And, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds great. Thanks, Ed, for reaching out to us from Napa, and we'll talk to you the week after next.
All right. Good enough, Warren.
Take care. Bye. All right. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski keeping us in the loop, thinking about how to go about gardening. And yeah, hopefully everybody's gardens are doing pretty well. You're snipping off your garlic scapes and enjoying those. And yeah, keeping things fertilized and thinned and doing good. So we're going to, like we just said here, we're going to skip next week. But feel free in the meantime to email here to the radio station through our website, or pop on in if a question crosses your mind when you're out in the garden and you want to get that answered by the expert. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski is always available on our program to answer your questions, and you can definitely get in touch with those questions, and we will find you the answers. And yeah, we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping us with underwriting for this program here. They're supporters of the radio station, and they're down there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. They're open every day but Wednesday, and their dahlias are in bloom and available by the stem, by a bouquet. You can get a subscription, and they've got lots more for the garden too: planters, soil, trees, shrubs. That's the Flower Farm. So thank you to them. And we're about to hand things over to High Country with Lars Christensen. He'll get you that Americana music all the way up till 4 o'clock. Then it's All Things Considered, followed by your local news at 4:30.
Change this life I lead. Well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.